Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
No, it's not Sunday. It's not Sunday, so don't go checking your calendar and wondering, wait a minute, what's he doing on a Wednesday night? We have a special show tonight because we had technical difficulties on Sunday. And I want to once again, as I did before, apologize to my listeners out there who were expecting a show on Sunday, and it was completely our fault over here at the Rocky Benisher Studios. So my sincere apologies, but we're ready to move forward today. Hey, before I begin, a couple of things. Number one, I want to remind you, if you want to call in and speak to us, our number is 347-884-9659. Once again, that's 347-884-9659. And we are also available on email if you want to write to us at StageRightAudio1. That's all one word, StageRightAudio1@gmail.com. I also would like to dedicate today's show to the passing of Joe Franklin. Joe Franklin, a television and radio host who passed away the other day at age 88. If you grew up in New York, as I did, Joe Franklin was a fixture. So we dedicate this show to him. At any rate, we are very, very excited today because, as advertised, we have a guest playwright extraordinaire on the line today, Ludmila Bolo, but her friends call her Lou, and that's what we're going to call her because she's our friend here at Stage Right. Lou, welcome to Stage Right.
I am excited to be on the air finally.
Yes, and Lou, we kept Lou waiting for quite a while on Sunday, a couple of times. She was a trooper. But okay, so we're ready to have a conversation with Lou. Lou, first of all, why don't you give our listeners a little background about your experience in theater and playwriting?
Oh, it's a half-hour show, so I'll try to keep it short. I've been playwriting since grade school, and I've 12 full lengths, 40 short, and productions in 90 different theaters in the U.S., 15 countries, many in different languages, won prizes, ran a theater magazine, also an actress, novelist, and et cetera. That should do it.
All this while raising 3 children.
Oh, yeah. I've said right. When I'm writing, unless there's a fire, don't disturb me.
Well, listen, I'm going to add to this just for a minute. As she said, hundreds of plays produced in 50 theaters, Australia, Brazil, Canada. Oh, it's 90 now? I've got an old one then. Okay. Well, keep correcting me. Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, England, Greece, South Africa, Taiwan. She has publications such as One Acts and Monologues for Women, The Church of the Holy Ghost, The Beach Club. I mean, it goes on and on. She has taught playwriting at the Rhinelander School of Arts, and she is an award-winning actress, editor of Theater USA, a national theater manager. My gosh, I'll tell you, we don't get a lot of guests on this show, but when we get them, we get them. We get the great ones. So welcome once again.
Oh, very good. You're very good. What else do you want to know?
Well, thank you. I want to tell my listeners this. Now, Lou the reason we have Lou on the show, folks, is because for weeks we've been talking about the Republican Theater Festival back in 2002 in Philadelphia. That's right. Lou's play, Battle Hymn.
2012.
Didn't I say that? I don't know what I
said. 2002. Okay.
All right. Well, so I'm 10 years behind the times. You're right. 2012. My apologies. 2012. Play Battle Hymn was featured on the show. So, Lou, would you please tell us what is Battle Hymn about and how did you come to write it?
I always take news stories, and there was news stories in Wisconsin that the statue of Jesus in a public park in Marshfield, Wisconsin, they're having a suit to take it down from the Freedom from Religion, an atheist group, which has headquarters in Madison. And they'd also had against crosses in public places, and it was just a whole thing, and there were letters to the editor, and I thought, letters and writing don't do so much good, but maybe a play would. So I thought up in my head what kind of play I could write about this incident. And this was written way before.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
No,
it was written
ahead,
way before the Republican Play Festival. And so when that came up, I thought, hey, this will fit. So it wasn't written for the festival, but it fit very well.
Okay. That was going to be my question. So you read my mind, but, you know, that's like reading a child's picture book. Yes, exactly. Exactly. All right, so Battle Hymn is a 10-minute play. It is a cast of three. It is Mabel, a middle-aged woman, John, her husband, and then a reporter. And just to give my readers some background here, and you correct me when I say something wrong like I did with the year before.
Okay.
Mabel and John are lamenting the fact that something is going on in the town. Somebody is going to be destroyed. What's beautiful about this play is that it does not tell us that it's a statue of Jesus until later on in the play. So we are intrigued and sitting at the edge of our seats, wondering who's getting hurt this time. And
destroyed.
So Mabel and John, right. So destroyed. So Mabel and John are upset about it. And the reporter comes on. He wants to interview them. They're a little bit, you know, taken aback, but they do have some things to say to the reporter. And I want to look into the play here, if that's okay.
Okay.
Well, one other thing, before the reporter comes on, you've got, I want to give the listeners a sense of what this play is.
You have to have plays read before they're produced.
Exactly, but they are meant to be seen, not read. So
right.
It's always second best when you read a play. All right. So John said that, you know, John says to Mabel, you know, we were going to pray for the person who is doing this hate-filled atheist who's demanded that the statue of Jesus come down, and who invested a great deal of money and got some powerful people behind him to make this happen. And he says to Mabel, says they even had all the little kids praying too, marching in the streets. And John responds, yeah, well, those kids, they had to do it on the streets because they don't allow them to pray anymore, not in the public schools anyway. Anyhow, who'd have thought? So right away, I think we're getting this sense that you, and tell me if I'm wrong, you are troubled by something, even the, like, we can't pray in our schools anymore. Is this the voice of Lou Bolo talking there?
Of course. I mean, I don't care if they don't want them to pray, but we've got a school here where you can't even mention Christmas, sing a Christmas carol, or mention Christmas anywhere. I mean, they want diversity in the schools, except if it's Christian.
Exactly. And
folks, they'll put on raunchy plays and everything else, but you can't celebrate Christmas anymore. Of course, praying has been outlawed for a long time.
Yes, since in the early 60s. Folks who listen to this show, I know we are all in agreement here, standing up and saying, absolutely, we support what this play is saying. So the reporter comes on. He's kind of, how would you describe the reporter and what he represents, Lou?
It can be a man or a woman, but I had a woman in there because I like women in my place. I don't know why, but anyhow.
I like women in my place, too.
Anyhow, she's a national one, and she's really riling at these two people, and they just rile right back because they've got all the information, and they bought the land, so it's no longer public land, and still they're being have the lawsuit against them. And so you have lights and you have camera and you have all of this being filmed while the audience is seeing it.
Absolutely. But I noticed, as you had mentioned also, the reporter is very antagonistic to them.
Right.
Are you saying something about the media in general? Or are you saying something about the media as it pertains to this particular true life case?
Yeah, no, this wasn't really about the media. It was just, you have to have people pivot against each other in place, and this made a good pivot.
Got it.
You know?
Got it. So, yep. Okay. Yes. Mabel says to the reporter, there never was any religious services here. It wasn't a cross like they made them tear down in that other Wisconsin city. No, this was just a gentle Jesus statue standing there at the edge of our town, welcoming everyone. A person, not a religion. And then John responds, I think these are very... I'm sorry?
It's okay.
I think I hate the delay on these lines. I think that these lines that I'm reading here, I want my readers, I want my listeners to hear them, because I think they come to the heart of what we're looking for on Stage Right. So I'm just going to read John's lines here that follow what Mabel just said. He says, immigrants settled here, couldn't afford to build a church, so they put their money together and had this statue put up instead. Hauled it here with their own wagons, stood it in the cornfield at the entrance to our city. Park wasn't built around it till later, donated by a farmer. It's our history, damn it! They don't let them tear down other historical places. Got laws that won't let them do that. I think this marks the first time that we have read something on Stage Right that truly gets to the heart of the matter of conservative, of what the kind of things that can be presented on the stage that represent a conservative viewpoint. Tell the audience what has ultimately happened in Battle Hymn. We've got this statue destroyed. The reporter's got what she needs. She goes away. And then what's the solution here?
The solution is a secret that he's hired somebody to come take the crumbled bits of the statue, and an architect in another city is going to make two statues, a man and a woman, that would welcome the people as it did before, but it would really be Jesus welcoming them in a different form. But they can't tell anybody that.
Right, but we're glad to know it. What a fitting ending to this play. So were you there the night,
and that's
all the nights?
That was the only thing in the play that was not true. And a playwright has, and I've been criticized for that, but a playwright has a right to, you know, make the ending how they want.
Absolutely. You know, listen, if you get your history from plays and movies, you're going to miss a lot of what actually happened. There is that artistic license. Right? I just saw the play, the movie I forgot what it's called. No, I didn't see that yet, but I did see the one with Benedict Cumberbatch as the guy who broke the code in World War II. The Imitation Game. Now, if you go to see that for your history, you are going to be a rather uninformed person. You go to see it for the value of the movie and the performances. I imagine that's the same thing here, right? You didn't write this play to be a historical something you can put in a history book as literal truth.
No.
Right.
I don't
No.
do that.
No, of course not.
But right now, I want to say that when you're a playwright, you have to have antagonist and the protagonist, and you get to see viewpoints from both sides in your head, because you have to, because you can't write one person, you know, just one way and then not have the other person another way. So you enlarge your thinking also. So it also enlarges the audiences.
And I think that's
terrific.
Does that make sense? Yes, it does. Are you talking, though, about... if you are a playwright, you really need in some way to present both sides of the issue? I just want to make sure I get it straight.
Exactly. You can't be a preacher, and you don't leave the audience with an answer. You leave them with questions, and that is the main idea.
Okay. Do you think that much of theater today follows that paradigm as you've just laid it out?
I don't really make suppositions about theater today. I read about it. I don't see as much as I used to. But I think they put on plays to make money. And if the audiences will go see a play that's not to my thinking and they pay the money, that's all they want. I mean, they don't care too much about the subject or anything. And as you can notice in movies and in magazines, the raunchier, the things against religion, I mean, they're all popular, so why wouldn't they follow that? But another aspect is the universities. All the universities that I know of are liberal. They have theater departments, so they're going to teach the young playwrights, the young writers, the young people in the acting that liberal is the way to go. So that's the basis of this, and we're paying for a lot of these colleges. And I don't blame the theaters because they have to make money. The colleges and universities do not. They are have free stages built for them. They have everything, you know, the directors are paid and so forth. So I think that might be more a problem than the theaters themselves, because so many theaters have closed because they can't make the money.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and you bring up a very important point about the university-level theaters where they are breeding grounds for that leftist kind of thinking. Is there a way we can combat that, though, Lou?
I don't see any. The Madison group had about book banning, and I researched quite a bit about Bible banning in schools and in hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, they didn't pick that play, but I mean, you can write things, but unless you get the right places, your churches do some of it, but you get the people who are already converted to go to those plays. And
right.
I think Angels in America was a horrible play, and it got all kinds of publicity. Tony Kushner was against the Mormons, it was against the Christians, and he's been hailed as a great playwright, and they have sex right on stage with two men. And I thought, well, if this is a great playwright, too bad I'm not one. So, hello? Hello? Hello. Hello. Hello?
Lou, are you there?
I am there, okay. Did they not like what I said?
No, I don't know. It cut out again. Okay, so this means, folks, but we keep going. We keep going. We were able to get back on this time. I apologize for that break, folks, but we're back on. Okay, so thank you very much for that. I hope it didn't cut you out in things you were saying. We were asking about whether this is something that can be combated in the colleges, and that's going to be a tough thing, but I know that there are conservative playwrights out there who want to be heard. Do you think that we should put on more conservative play festivals, Lou?
I don't like labels. I don't like labels on plays, black plays, feminist plays, religious plays. I think you just have to have a good play, and if it's good play, and plays should entertain, enlighten, and grab our emotions. And you can't label plays. People will do it, and reviewers will do it. The reviewers can destroy a play. I've had a play that, had tons and tons of productions, and then it had one in Minneapolis, and the reviewer really slammed it. Of course, I looked up all his reviews, and he slammed all the plays. So people have a lot of control over things in the theater that we don't know about.
Right. Do you think that the reason let's just say conservative plays. I have this theory. My theory is that we are a center-right country, and we are not that viewpoint is not represented in our culture, in our arts, in our dramatic arts in particular. It is not represented. Therefore, as I always say, 1,000 years from now, aliens come down to Earth and they say, gee, what was the United States like in 2015? And they find the artifacts of all these plays written. They say, well, I guess they were a very left-wing, near-socialist country. So this scares me, Lou.
No, it doesn't scare me, because the movies, the magazines, it's not just the plays, it's the whole attitude, and thank heavens we have the internet where we can, I listen to the Drudge, I don't know if that's good or bad to say, but the comments, I enjoy the comments more than the articles, and we can talk back on the internet, which we couldn't do before, and they're having a play at the university here, it's about diversity, and they advertise what it's about, and if the people go see it, fine, if that's what they want to see, but they do have a lot of different plays out there to pick, but you have to go to the playbooks, and Samuel French does great with having diversity. Broadway Plays, which has two books of my plays, is open to all kinds, and so you can go through the books and pick what you want to put on.
That's so there's hope for us then. I think there's hope for us.
Oh, of course,
but it
there's
may
always
be
hope.
Right, right. But
and
I think
writers,
that you hit on. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Writers are good writers. So if they write something, it's listened to more than just the, you know, the bloggers that say this and say that. If you're a good writer, you can write letters, you can write plays, you can write articles, you can get your voice out there. And I haven't had time to do all that, so I apologize for myself.
Well, don't apologize. You haven't had time to do it. You've got a resume that's 40 pages long, and you don't have time. My goodness. How do you have time to eat, I wonder?
You know what my new play is, but don't tell anybody. My new
play,
the title, The Mercy Killing of Pitiful Pearl. And I have to have... I have to research and go into Pitiful Pearl. I mean, not Pitiful Pearl, the mercy killing bit. And it can be a religious thing or it can be a right or a left, and I'm not sure yet, but I can have the people argue among themselves. So I have to bring out both sides of that condition also.
When you write a play, well, that's fabulous. When you write a play, does it kind of take on that life of its own? Or
I hope so.
So when you start to write a play, you have a general idea what you want to write, but you don't have, it's not so scripted for you yet. It happens as you're writing it. Is that what you're saying?
I pick characters, and I like the downtrodden people, and I pick places. And when I was in high school, every play was a living room drama, and I made up my mind I would never have a play set in a living room. I've had them in a restroom, in a beach, on the beach, and in a church. And I think if you put the people in the right place, you can tack the story on. The story isn't always there, but it comes through.
Now, wait a minute, Lou. You said just a second ago that you like to focus on the downtrodden. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been told that people of the right absolutely abhor the downtrodden, that we have nothing to do with them, that we only think about the rich and how to make the richer. I can't even say it.
Well, so they lie the best. They lie the best they can.
The
downtrodden,
right,
are human beings, and I think that's what you have to do in a play, because a play can take anybody and make them human, even if they're bad.
Absolutely. Here, we support that. Let's talk about the, because we don't have a lot of time left, so let's talk about this. You mentioned that you had been criticized for Battle Hymn, we had a blogger, you had sent me information about a blogger who said, in my opinion, this is what the blogger said, folks, in my opinion, basically all Republican policy ideas are immoral, impractical, or specious. So it didn't sound like this guy was coming to with an open mind, even though he claims he did.
Right.
And by the way, were you at the shows? Did you go to all the performances?
No, I live in Wisconsin, and this was in Philadelphia, and I was really sorry I couldn't, because there was a lot of history.
Okay. So this guy, folks, this person wrote this blog. And he's going on and on and on about how this playwriting, this festival was not, contentious as he thought it might be. The plays in general were terrible. But he focuses on one play, doesn't he, Lou?
Of course, the best one.
Yes, right. He says, folks, and I'm obviously this is the blogger, this is not us. He says, all of this is he's rambling on. He says all of this is leading me up to the play I like the least, basically because it actually did make me really mad. And the more I found out about it, the madder I got. The play was Battle Hymn by Ludmilla Bolo. So
ta-da.
I think it's a good thing that you got this guy mad, quite honestly.
Because he didn't believe such a thing could happen. And then he did apologize after he went and saw all the news stories. You could just pick them up right on the internet, all the news stories about this whole incident. And he had to backtrack and apologize for being so stupid and ignorant. Okay?
Really? Wow. You should
if you read... And he had even put pictures on. He said he very seldom apologizes for anything. But he did read this, and he put the pictures that were in the news stories, and it made him apologize. The other thing about the...
This is great. That's great. Go on. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, and the two people who... The two people who played the leads... We're not religious people, but it said the idea got to them. So you can write conservative or religious plays, and the actors have to believe what these people believe, which makes them think a little deeper also.
I think that's an excellent point, because an actor, if he or she is going to bring any life to a part, has to be able to feel something that makes the part, you know, motivates this part. So clearly you're saying that these leads did. They felt it. So your play
right.
spoke to them, even without right. being religious. Well, you know what? It spoke to me too, and I am not a Christian. I am a Jew, but it spoke to me as well. Yes.
Well,
so,
great. Because I write about human beings.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't write about types. Right, you don't write about segments of the population. You write about people, so you don't break people down the way the left does.
I felt the older people were really put upon for a long time, and my play In the Restroom at Rosenblum's, which is a comedy, has gotten the biggest productions. It was done in England. It's done in so many places, and I felt the older people needed their side. Broadcast also, and I've had a couple other plays about the older people, but maybe I'll go back to more conservative ideas. You've spurred me on.
Well, this is great. This is great. All right, and I want to spur lots of people on out there. I want you. You too can be Lou Bolo. So, just
I doubt it.
Yeah. He said.
Do you know how old I? Do you know how old I am?
I'm going to guess 40.
I am 85, so I've been writing plays since grade school. My first play in grade school was Columbus going through the back of the coat room and coming on the other side to America. That was my first play.
And that incident had only happened a few years earlier, right? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Well,
so
God
in high
bless.
School, I wrote play. Pardon me?
I said, God bless at 85. That is fabulous. Good for you.
I think so. I mean, the computer. When I first wrote plays, I had to use carbon paper, shoe polish for whiteout, and I didn't have money for envelopes. I'd put them in paper bags. And a lot has changed with the computer. I think it's marvelous that, you know, you can do plays on computers and send them out now, too. Because postage
Absolutely.
Has gone up. Yeah, and I don't
Absolutely.
Like it when they charge to read plays. Nobody enters those contests except the down-and-outer playwrights.
Okay, I better stop entering those contests. hey, Lou, we have got to run because we are out of time, but I would love to talk to you again. You are fascinating. You have many, many great ideas. Quickly, what's next for Lou Bolo?
I finished my book. My book is out, and now I'm going back to this play, The Mercy Killing of Pitiful Pearl. So
we are looking forward to it. We are looking forward to it here on Stage Right.
And I've had
Ladies
a happy time with you, and thank you for all you are doing for the good people.
Thank you, Lou. Everybody, Make sure you listen to this show if you haven't listened to it live. Best wishes to all. We'll see you Sunday at 1:30. We are exiting stage left. Right.
Goodbye.
My God, goodbye.
Clap, 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 clap.